A man was hiring for a job vacancy. He interviews a number of people online, and he tells them it's probably the most important job in the company. And he reads the requirements to them. He says, first, mobility. You have to be constantly on your feet, exerting yourself, high stamina. So, the slides will come up in a second. There we go. This is the guy interviewing. First, mobility. You have to be constantly on your feet, high stamina. And the applicants ask him, okay, what about breaks, when you take breaks? He says, no breaks. You have to only take lunch when the associate does. You have to constantly follow the associate around. And actually, you have to stay up late when the associate does. And so some of them say, what about holidays? No holidays. In fact, the workload actually intensifies during these periods. If you had a life, we'd basically be asking you to give that up. Is this legal? Some of them question. Is this every day of the year? Yes. Well, that's just cruel. That's too much. The connections you make and the feeling of really helping your associate are immeasurable. So crickets are chirping at this point, eyes are shifting around. And he says, let's cover salary. We'd be asking you to work pro bono. You get absolutely nothing. And so at this point, the applicants are laughing and they're just blurting out, nobody's going to take that job. And the interviewer says, what if I told you someone was holding the position right now, billions of people? So they ask, who? Moms. So happy Mothering Sunday to all the moms and to mine. This is just a moment in the interview where all of these applicants are thinking back in relief that they're not going to have to do the job. And then they recount the requirements, and they think, moms are, they were always on their feet, there's no holidays, no pay. And so at this point, they're just sort of overwhelmed with gratitude. Many of them start spontaneously telling these stories of, my mom was amazing, she did this for me. And it's a fantastic Mother's Day video. You can actually catch it on YouTube. And my dad is the one who shared it with me, so due credit. My title today is Always Show Them Christ. And that story about the mothers is actually something that's got, I think, some of the key ideas that I want to be pulling out as well. We're going to talk about the kind commander, and then I'm going to move through the clear command that's coming out of this text in each of the three big examples Peter gives us. And I want to end with a key question. And so before we get into the command is to submit in all these different ways. But I think it's so key that we first see the kind commander. And so the author of this text is Peter. This should be a massive encouragement for us. Peter was the bombastic one. Sometimes Peter got things spectacularly right. When Jesus asks his disciples, who do you say I am? And Peter is the one who says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, God the Father gave you those words. Fantastic. And then there were times when Peter got things wrong. And there were many examples of this in the Gospels. But God was kind and patient and persevered with Peter. And so actually, there's so much of God's kindness in choosing Peter to be the one to write these words to the church and to us. Because Peter is now, after all his failures, the leader of this early church. And he's leading them through their trials. He is encouraging them. And so in his example, we see someone who encourages us because we too get many things wrong. We can get bogged down in that, but it's so good for us to remember that God can still use us. We also see something of Peter's kindness, and I'm thinking particularly in chapter 2, verse 11, where one translation has it, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul." And so Peter is calling them the beloved. He says, he's writing to this Hebrew church under Roman rule. And he knows that they're suffering, they're being persecuted, they're actually enduring some of the worst persecution we ever know about in Christian history. But he also knows who they are in Christ. And so Peter knows that they follow Christ. He knows that they are those who believe in him, even though they haven't seen him. And he spent the beginning of the letter just going over and over how wonderful that is and how much they're to be thinking about that now, particularly now. They are those who have been given a new birth through Christ's death and resurrection. They've been shown an everlasting mercy through everything that God has done for them. They are those that, even though they haven't seen him, love him. And they're going through trials, yes. But those are serving a purpose, they're proving their faith, and they're actually glorifying God. And in light of all of that, they are a people of inexpressible joy because God has gone beyond their understanding to use his power and move in time and through his son to do things that they could have never imagined, creating this identity, this relationship with God, and this future that they hope in, that they could have never imagined, that they could certainly have never earned. And so we are beloved with them. He calls them exiles. They're ruled by another nation. They are away from home, but their deepest sense of exile has to come from being people who believe in and follow Christ in a society that finds that laughable. And so we are exiles with them. And he talks about war. This is a painting by Joseph Gray, a man from Dundee who fought in World War I. It's a man telling us from his experience about the danger of war. And Peter is a lot like this painter. In his letter, he's warning us about the danger of our evil desires. Peter's been there. He knows how bad it can get. In the passion of his own pride, he told Jesus that he wouldn't have to suffer. In the passion of his self-pity, he denied Christ three times the night before his crucifixion. These are things that gained Peter really heavy rebuke from Jesus and things that made him weep bitterly that night. And so he's urging the church that he's writing to away from losses that he's taken and pain that he knows. And so his words are quite clear. If you were paying attention when Ian was reading, you would have been struck by a few things. And Peter can write like this because he absolutely doesn't want to be misunderstood about this command to submit. So he's, in sum, saying, you know, Christ has given you this new identity. It is glorious. Your desires are now out to sort of ruin that. And so be heeding this command. And the command, the clear command, is to submit. Peter actually gives us to this in three doses. At the most public level, he talks about submitting to government. Then at a very private level, he talks about husbands and wives submitting to each other. And then there's this intermediate layer where he's, at the most common level, we could say, talking about submitting at work. It's particularly striking because Nero's government at the time ruling the church that Peter's writing to, would appall any of us reading about it today. Nero, Emperor Nero, was someone who enjoyed persecuting Christians. He was burning Christians at parties. He was feeding them to lions. And he actually gained himself the title Antichrist in his time. Peter never questions Nero's leadership. He instead is laser focused the whole time on God's sovereignty. And so, never forgetting that, he says, submit to the emperor and to his officers. And he says, Jesus submitted in his time, and so this is our example. Did his listeners struggle to hear that with everything that they were going through? Almost certainly. Do we struggle with the things that Christ asks us to do today? Very often. But in the heat of that struggle, our job is to make God visible through perseverance and through returning good for every evil. And so showing Christ to your accusers and those who would treat you unfairly, in chapter 2, verse 12, Peter says, those who speak ill of you may see your actions and glorify God with you. Do we disagree with our government when they take the other stance, when they make it look like the Christians are getting in the way of their political progress? Yes, we disagree with them. But we are not called to speak ill of our leaders. We're called instead to maintain respect, because our hope is that even someone like Nero would, seeing Christ, come to know him and glorify God on the day he visits us. And so Jesus puts it slightly differently. He said, when someone slaps you, turn the other cheek. When someone sues you for your shirt, give him your coat also. It's a really blunt command, and it's something that we can immediately apply by thinking, okay, who's the person that gets under my skin? Who's troubling you? And who is it that you're maybe complaining to your friends about regularly? Are you going to mock our leaders? Are you going to find some opportunity to show your friends how clever you can be? Or are you going to show them Christ? So Peter applies this in the example with government, and he also develops this in an example, second example, in the workplace. He says, submit at work, and he talks about submitting to good bosses and to terrible bosses. This actually holds when the innocent are wrongly punished at work, and I think that's the point. Peter is encouraging the humility to bear unjust punishment. And actually, he tells us here that God approves of this. This is something that God will, a humility that God will celebrate. In verse 20 in chapter 2, he says, keeping God in mind, essentially submit to even that kind of boss. Why? In verse 21, it says that to this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. You think submitting to that kind of wicked, horrible boss is a ridiculous thing. That's what our inclination is. But actually, Peter's drawing that clean out and saying, you're a Christian, you follow Christ. To not submit would be the ridiculous thing. And so Christ is the one who submitted to his unjust torture and won us our salvation. That's how we come to be here. We have new birth in Christ because he submitted to his Father's will and to so much punishment. Peter actually spells out Christ's example, the abused Christ who was insulted but did not return that abuse. He trusted instead the one who judges justly. And so maybe you don't like your boss. Maybe your coworkers have been rude. The next time you find yourself in that situation, is it time for self-pity? Is it, oh, I'll throw up my hands this time and walk away? Or is it an opportunity to show Christ-like endurance at your workplace? Because when you're trusting in God, the abuse that you're going through, it's really not about you. It's about what the Holy Spirit can do in that moment in your relationship to that other person. It's like where my mom works. Some of her colleagues would go out of their way to make her life difficult there. They'd insult her, they'd say things about her age, and just try to convince her that she's not as good as them at doing the job. My mom would come home, exasperated, tell the stories to my brother and I, and we would say what we can. And it would take years, but things started to change. And now they call her aside, and they confide in her in the office. These same people call her on the phone at night, and they're on long conversations. And they confide in her, they say sorry, they ask her advice about really difficult things that they struggle with now or things from their past. And my mom is comforting these people who harassed her. It's a kind of ministry that she has to these people because she submitted when she had the opportunity. She showed a Christ-like character. And these are people who trust and take her at her word. They trust her advice, and they really are grateful for her prayers because they see how she lives directly with them, not in anything that she says or because she goes to church. It's something that's very real in her life through her submission. And her example is something that makes me think about Jesus' command, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So I hope if you're going to work tomorrow, I hope it goes well. But if things go bad, if something unfair happens to you, will you be pitying yourself because of that? Will you start thinking about what your rights are, what you deserve? Or will you show the people that you're working with Christ in this way? Because if you're trusting in God, if you're really certain that you are, as Peter writes, his beloved, if you have a confidence in that, then this is how you can act. This is how we act when we know that we are God's beloved. And when things get difficult at work, don't get in a rage. Don't get in a rant about your dignity, but look at it instead as the answer to your prayers for God to use you. In the third example, Peter gets personal, and he says, show your spouse Christ. He starts his address to men and to women with the same words. He says, in the same way. And so he's applying that example of Christ again in another layer. And the women that he's writing to, some of them were trapped in this idea that they'd dress up a certain way, decorate themselves, and be influencing men. Some of the men were clearly throwing their weight around. They had to be reminded, be considerate, don't be harsh. So these are two kinds of power play. But Jesus doesn't tempt us to do what he wants, and he won't force us either. And so Peter encourages the gentle and quiet behavior that has always pleased God. He says this can show people God in a way that they've always wanted to see him. This can bring people to Christ without a spoken word. It's a kind of evangelism where you don't have to get all the answers right. And I pray it would be our evangelism. So we've seen these three examples that Peter lays out in his text. We've seen the public, the very private, and this very common example. So often we don't want to submit when these opportunities arise. We want to fight instead and retaliate and show people that we're right or that they can't treat us like that. And this is something Peter would have understood very well from his own time with Jesus. When Jesus was being arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, the soldiers turn up. Peter knows that this is wrong. And he draws his sword and he shows that he's going to fight. He's not going to submit to this. And he rationalizes it as fighting for Christ, right? I think that's our temptation too very often. And so Peter's sword out, cuts this guy's ear off. And Jesus not only stops what he's doing, but he actively reverses it, healing the soldier's ear. I think there's something powerful in the idea that the enemy would be able to hear through Christ's transforming power. And I see submission wrapped up in that. The fact that Jesus had to undo his followers' damage should be a red flag for us and draw us in to see just how important it is that we know this Christ that we're trying to show other people in all our actions. And so let's look at him in the text today. Verse 22, he committed no sin and no deceit was found in his mouth. When Jesus was wrongly arrested, he was silent. Verse 23, when they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. Jesus was sure. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. Jesus was servant, and for you were going astray like sheep, but now you have returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls. Jesus is our shepherd, and he wants us to learn all of these traits through Christ-like submission. Jesus was all of this in his darkest moments so that he could be the light in ours. So that when things go wrong, we have someone to look to and we know what to do. When Jesus' soul was overwhelmed with pain praying in the garden that night, when he sweat blood and collapsed in the dirt praying to his Father, he held firm to his trust in God. When they beat him at his false trial just after that, he showed more submission. And when he was flogged and beaten again and then crucified, he prayed for his murderers, "Father, forgive them. They know not what they do." And standing at the epicenter of that concentrated integrity, submission, all that love that he was showing, one of his murderers changed. And a Roman soldier looks up at the naked, crying, red wreck of Christ crucified. And his words are unforgettable. Surely, he was the Son of God. We have to ask ourselves, are we ashamed of the brutalized Christ hanging from a tree, humiliated in his torture and death? Or are we proud that he chose to endure all of that for us? If we are proud of him, we will choose to endure like him, and we will know him. So through these three examples, Peter's giving us this command to submit at this public level, at this private level, and at this very common level. It's a command that he draws direct lines to Christ's example with, and we see it in so many of Christ's teachings. When someone slaps you on the cheek, turn him the other. Also, when someone sues you for your shirt, give him your coat also. And the Beatitudes, the last one saying, when you're persecuted and reviled for my sake, blessed are you, rejoice. Great is your reward in heaven. So it's not just for these three cases. It's actually a kind of universal Christ-like example for us to follow. While working on some of the ideas in the sermon, I've been chatting to different people. You get two responses. You get people who are a bit shocked but accept, and you get a kind of shocking rejection. And so the acceptors admit that does sound a difficult call, but they acknowledge that it's God doing the calling, and with his help, we can do this. People who rejected the idea, they run scenarios, different calculations they get into, and create a circumstance where the moral thing to do is what they feel entitled to do. I don't think Jesus took that option. And so I'd encourage us to do what Peter does here and actually think again about Jesus' suffering and all that he went through for us to be his and for us to understand his submission and follow him. Compared to what he endured, he's asking little of us. Peter says that God is pleased when our trust in him overcomes the fear of this unfair punishment. And he shows us that Christ died so that we could follow this example. Instead of getting into lots of different scenarios, my question would be, are you sure you want to avoid this in your own life? If you think through some of the most fulfilling moments in your life, we were talking about motherhood. These principles are at play. And so the mother goes through intense pain to give birth. There are many moments of putting herself last, of repeatedly having to hold her temper. When the child's grown and doing well, does she regret all of that? Or are those moments precisely a big part of what make motherhood so beautiful, those sacrifices? Maybe you're not a mother. You could just think about friendship. So your friend calls you up, they're going through something difficult, and you've opted in this time to help them. It might cost you time away from your work, time away from your family, might make your life a little bit more difficult while you're helping your friend. It might take weeks for them to resolve whatever they're going through. But when that's done and they've made peace with the situation, do you feel inclined to tell your friend, you know, I really regret having sat down and talked to you and helped you through all of that? Or is it exactly the fact that you put yourself after your friend that makes that friendship special now? I think actually regret tends to come when we avoid these opportunities. Opportunities to do something really worthwhile in relation to our children, our coworkers, our marriage partners, our friends. And something that Peter's telling us really pleases God and that he celebrates. And so the truth is that however bad this looks and feels, that's not the end of it. Actually, this submission has a sequel that Peter's been hinting at the whole time. As Paul put it, if we are united to him in a death like his, we will certainly be united to him in a resurrection like his. And so this is a picture of Christ resurrected, and he's just talking to Thomas, who's having a hard time believing he's come back to life. And he's getting Thomas to actually put his hand in his wounds. It's a striking picture because the same wounds that once brought so much pain and death now bring life and rejoicing, and help Thomas to see what the truth is about Jesus, that he's God. And so this transformation is described in each of the examples that Peter gives us. In the public example with regards to government, he's saying that they may glorify God on the day he comes to judge. They, being the ones who clearly had it in for you, hated you, spoke all kinds of evil things about you, they will glorify God with you. I think that's a goal that will break each of our evil desires. In the most private example, he says that they may be one without a spoken word, which is shocking, but it is the thing that people tend to take away from us, how we conduct ourselves, our character. And seeing that kind of submission that we're not inclined to do of our own really strikes people. And they may be one without a spoken word, by nothing but the force of God's character displayed in our lives. In the most common example, he says, by his wounds we are healed. Wounds are something that we all know something about in our own lives. We probably know a fair number of people who are struggling with one thing or the other. I know in my struggles, there's nothing as encouraging as someone who's been through it themselves and can tell me with confidence, you'll get through this. If we're in an imperfect world and maybe more wounds are on the way, then the question becomes, can I live in such a way that the things that I go through, my wounds, can be used by God like Christ were, can be a resource in the lives of other hurting people, and help even to show people that Jesus is God? And so to sum up, Peter proved that even the most fiery of us can learn to win this war against our passions. We can learn to see things that aren't fair, things that don't go our way, as Jesus saw these things. And keeping our trust in God the way he did, we can learn to see opportunities in all of these problems, to show people Christ through submission. This is a submission God can use to draw people to himself, and even people we would least expect, even the soldier who was there, a part of killing Jesus that day. And so whenever your temper flares, I guess the key question that you can be trying to come back to with all these things, to take hold of the opportunity to show someone Christ in that moment, is just, will I show them Christ?